My name is Will Wheeler. I'm a PhD student at Utah State University, and I'm going to briefly talk to you about my dissertation research, which is looking at irrigation scheduling using a ratio of relative sap velocity to modeled environmental demand. So one of the reasons we're interested in doing this is for the implementation of deficit irrigation in orchard crops, and this has been shown to improve fruit quality and post-harvest handling, as well as control vegetative growth when applied during specific times during the tree's growth. It's also a great way to reduce environmental impact of orchard crops. It's by reducing waters or improving water savings, and then thereby reducing runoff. So our lab has been working on this issue for a number of years, and before I was actually there, Dr. Lance Stott, who was a PhD student before me, and I took over his position. He's now a professor at Utah State University, and he looked at a number of different methods of how to approach this problem. And one of the first things he tried was actually using capacitance sensors. So these are soil moisture sensors, and he just stuck them directly into the tree to get a measure of how hydrated the wood was. It worked fairly well, but it wasn't sensitive enough as we would hoped. So it wasn't a good enough indicator to implement the precise type of deficit irrigation we were hoping to achieve. Another method he worked with was infrared radiometry. So this is commonly used in crops like alfalfa and corn. And as the water becomes less available, trees can't transpire as much, or plants in general can't transpire as much, so the canopy heats up. So you can actually observe a change with a thermal camera in the canopy temperature, and then thereby determine when to irrigate. So this works really well with a continuous canopy, such as alfalfa and corn. With trees, they're a much more dispersed crop. You have these grassy rows in between. You also have large branches, and when the tree begins to set fruit, you have these large fruits that begin to interfere with thermal measurements. So again, this just didn't achieve the level of precision we were hoping to do precision irrigation scheduling. And then finally, just before he left, Dr. Stott worked a little bit with thermocouple psychrometry, and it's a pretty sensitive system and instruments. And we did a lot of stuff in the lab, but we never quite made it out into the field. So again, a lot of promising methods, but we never quite got where we wanted to. So in preparation for me to take over this position, I did a lot of reading in the literature, and one of the things that immediately popped out was just the use of sap flow sensors. These are widely established in the fields of ecology and agricultural research, and they can be used to estimate transpiration. The sensors themselves are relatively inexpensive. The ones we're working with are around $200. You do have to buy some data loggers and other things to make them work, but they're not too bad. And then we can automate these measurements with being able to take a measurement approximately every 15 minutes or so. So if you look in the bottom left, we have a picture of one of the sensors we're working with, and you can see the yellow dots are actually thermistors, so these are temperature sensors. And then we have our center needle, which is actually contains a heating element. And what we do is we just simply drill into the tree and insert this into the tree. And every 15 minutes or so, we send out a heat pulse. And then with these temperature sensors, we monitor how fast that heat is being carried away from that center heating needle. So these are great. There's a lot of benefits. There are some challenges. So you're not meant to absorb too much from this slide. It's pretty much just meant to overwhelm you. It's a simple technology, but if you're really trying to get a volume amount of how much water is moving through the tree, you need to be able to estimate the sapwood. You need to be able to determine the thermal conductivity, diffusivity, and specific heat of that sapwood, as well as the moisture content. So we were really looking for an easily implementable irrigation scheduling method, and this we saw as one of the first hurdles to making this easy to implement. And when doing some of our initial research, we thought one of the things we noticed is that relative sap velocities, so if we just punch in some numbers for thermal diffusivity and thermal conductivity, and we just get a relative number, we don't get an absolute number, it is really well correlated to transpiration rate. So we started to ask ourselves, is it absolutely necessary to have a definitive, accurate number of how much water is moving through that tree? And we thought maybe we don't. Maybe if our relative sap velocity goes up, we know transpiration is increasing in the tree. If it goes down, we know transpiration is decreasing. So our proposed idea is to create kind of a tree hydration index by ratioing this relative sap velocity to modeled environmental demand. And to kind of explain that a little bit more clearly, I have this nice cartoon for you. So if, for example, if we have a bright sunny day and we have 1 unit of environmental demand and we calculate how much demand this is, and we also have a well-watered tree, so that tree can draw on as much water as it needs, and it has 1 unit of sap velocity. If we put this in a ratio, we have a nice 1-to-1 ratio, and we know that tree is well watered. Similarly, on a cloudy day, if we model the environmental demand, we know it's going to be a little bit less, maybe it's about half, and our tree is still well watered, so it can draw on as much water as it needs. But that velocity, just by the fact that there isn't as much driving gradient from the environment, is going to be lower. So again, if we put that in a ratio to the environmental demand versus the sap velocity, we'll get this nice stable ratio that will account for changes in the environment. And then where it'll be really useful is if we have a bright sunny day but a water-limited tree, so it can't draw on as much water, and the sap velocity actually declines because it can't pull as much water out of the soil. And then in this instance, our ratio would go down. So that we're hoping that this would be a sensitive enough indicator to actually enable us to do deficit irrigation. A couple of preliminary studies, and instead of driving all over the state of Utah and putting these sensors in different orchards, we thought we should just try this out and make sure it works. So we stepped outside our office, and we had this nice big maple tree. And I actually have data from fruit trees from this year, but for a number of technical issues, this is a more robust data set from this maple tree. But I promise the data looks exactly the same in the fruit trees, but I'm going to just show you this data from the maple trees. So we installed our sensors, and the first thing we did is we looked at about an hourly measurements over the course of about a week. So you can see here our black line is our sap velocity, and then our green line is an hourly time step for the Pinman-Monteith-derived evapotranspiration. We had a great correlation. We had R-squared about 0.95. So we took that as an indicator that we could move forward with this process. And then we integrated these measurements over 24-hour time steps for the course of the spring and early summer. So again, our black line is our sap velocity, and what we did is we simply summed the total velocity. It doesn't make a lot of sense as a unit, but we just, again, need a relative number to see how big that number is. And then we compared that to our green line, which is our evapotranspiration, and you can notice right away our R-squared went down a little bit on this 24-hour integration. But we thought, you know, the R-squared is still okay, and we went ahead and we calculated this ratio. And what you can notice is there's a couple of things. First off, what we noticed is that for the bulk of the time, this is a well-watered tree, so our ratio didn't deviate from the mean very much, only about 4%. But there were some challenges. So you might notice right away these two big spikes. And what you can see here is our evapotranspiration declining much more rapidly than our sap velocity. So we went back through our data, and what we found out was these were very, very cloudy days, like almost completely overcast for the entire day. And then taking that information, we actually went back through and looked at a couple of these littler spikes, and these are partially cloudy days. So we kind of hit pause and went back to the literature. And if any of you are familiar with the Penman-Monteith, you know it's this hypothetical short reference crop. So it's a grass crop. And because this is a continuous canopy, very short, it creates this large boundary layer around it that affects the relative humidity and vapor pressure deficit in the surrounding air. So actually for this Penman-Monteith-derived evapotranspiration, the primary driver for that is net incoming radiation. If you consider a tree, it's the complete opposite. Most of your canopy is way up in the air. There's not a big boundary layer around it. And half of that canopy is actually shaded. The top is shaded from the bottom. So the primary driver for transpiration in trees is bulk air conditions. So this is a pretty big difference. And this is what was causing these large spikes to occur, is that we had really cloudy days. Our net radiation went down, but the overall ambient air conditions were still, especially because we're in Utah, it was really, really dry, and it still caused the tree to transpire quite a bit. So that's all the data I have to present. Kind of moving forward, we were considering maybe tinkering with the guts of the standard Penman-Monteith. One of the reasons we're thinking about doing this is because it's widely reported. And again, we want this to be a really accessible method that growers could easily pick up off the shelf, maybe go to their extension website and get a number. So that was the idea of maybe messing with the standard Penman-Monteith above and beyond just simply applying crop coefficients, which aren't going to change the dynamic of how coupled it is to net incoming radiation. Another thing that we're considering is simply using an alternative ET model, such as the one proposed by Jarvis and McNaughton in 1986. And this one, it takes more into account boundary layers and has been used to model tree transpiration in other research. So we have a lot of work to do, but just kind of an overview of where we are and where we hope to go. And with that, I have about 2.5 minutes for if anyone has questions. Yes. So the question was, have we ever tried to implement it on a larger scale? And we haven't. We started scaling up this summer. So I actually moved into fruit trees in a small orchard, and we're just kind of playing around at this point. So. Yeah. Yes.
Can you measure or estimate the ET of one tree that's like by a building?
Yeah.
Usually it's a uniform field or an orchard.
Mm-hmm. So the question was, how do we estimate the ET value of one tree? We actually didn't at any real point. We were taking these relative sap velocity measurements, and then we were just looking at short reference Penman-Monteith derived evapotranspiration for like a grass canopy, and we were just seeing how that correlated to the sap velocity when we added all this sap velocity up into it.
Okay, so it's correlated to
ETO. Yeah, but it not that well.
So the one-story building and the three.
3-story tree.
All right, that's my time.